meeting of the Planning and Development Committee at 12:15 p.m. This is 12:18. We're a little past time. Item number two on the agenda is approval of the minutes from the August 2nd meeting. Do I have a motion? Do we have a motion? Do we have a second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. The meeting minutes are approved from August. Item number three is public comment. If there is anyone here for public comment, please come to the podium. You have 2 minutes to speak. State your name and address for the record.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Ross Appel. I'm an attorney in Charleston. I represent CKC Properties LLC. This is the developer of the Shem Creek Boutique Hotel. My clients and I have been concerned for the past 2 months or so regarding statements that have been made to the press, etc., about taking action to kill this project. The project has been under development review since October of last year. The project is vested, and our concerns are that there's this item on the agenda this evening, item number seven, where there's supposed to be a discussion about hotels and the NC district, etc. Our request is for the town to follow their own procedures and standards for rezoning amendments. Specifically, the town's zoning review process document specifies that a public hearing must take place before the Planning Commission before the matter comes to y'all at committee. That has not happened at the last Planning Commission meeting. It was not up for a public hearing. There's been no draft ordinance. We haven't been able to put our eyes on any proposed ordinance. Second request is this whole issue can be resolved. You will never see me again on this issue if you put language into the proposed ordinance to make it the effective date prospective in nature. In other words, for newly submitted applications, for applications not currently in the development review process, that will take us out of it. And if y'all want to change the rules prospectively, no problem here whatsoever. However, if the rules are changed and an attempt is made to retroactively apply this to our client's property, I hate to say it, y'all, we've been down this road before with other hotel projects in the town. Y'all have been through this before with other controversial developments. We're headed in that direction. We don't want to go in that direction. It's the last thing we want to do. This property is fully entitled by right. It's got vested rights, and we would respectfully ask that the town not do anything to interfere with my client's zoning and vested rights. Thank you very much.
Is there anyone else for public comment? Yes, come forward, please.
Well, I know you're unhappy to see me again, but I'm back. Chris Coleman, 118 Pitt Street, and I'm here to talk a little bit about item 6A and 7. As to item 6A, I sent in a written comment on the zoning for waterfront working. Waterfront working includes, as of right, restaurants and a conditional use outdoor dining. I guarantee you that the remaining properties that are working will go restaurant and they will go soon. You are ensuring that that district disappears. And what it will do is it will add nice big buildings that look just like Shem Creek. And the only limitation is on the outdoor amplified music. And I can guarantee you that they will disobey that because the Post House and other people do as well. You will wreck the neighborhood at the end of Hadrill's Point by leaving restaurants in there. If you need them to have a use to convert to, give them the right to turn it into single family homes. It will at least fit into the neighborhood. But if you put Shem Creek down there, it will damage that neighborhood permanently. Second piece, parking. You are proposing to add a more restrictive parking requirement in that district of 1.25 spaces. I don't care one way or another about that, but I can tell you that it won't be enforced because the nonconformities ordinance will come back into play. And the Zoning Board of Appeals recently ruled in the conversion of a conforming property in retail use to restaurant use that it did not have to abide by on-street parking requirements because it would inhibit a reasonable use of that site. So don't believe for one second that any limitation on parking will have any impact unless you take them outside of the nonconformities ordinance. I'll be happy to share the Zoning Board's ruling. It's extreme, and you should be aware of it.
Thank you
for your time, as always.
Thank you so much. Is there anyone else for public comment? All right. Public comment is closed. Item number four on the agenda is employee years of service recognition.
Teresa, you want to come up here? This is Teresa, and we are recognizing her today for 5 years of service. Teresa started as a part-time receptionist on September 12, 2016. She's the face of the department. She's the first person that people talk to and they see when they come to the planning department. She has no easy task in keeping all of the employees in the department, keeping us stocked with everything that we need, everything that you can imagine. On top of that, she knows who does what, so every phone call, and we get a variety of them, every phone call that comes in, she is familiar with, she's familiar with who it goes to. A lot of times, she probably can answer it all herself, but she's been around for a while, and she's learned a lot, and she's mastered a lot of things, including Oracle, which is our town's financial software. She seamlessly ensures all invoices are processed and paid. She's an integral part of the staff group. She takes it upon herself to go above and beyond. She'll do research on things that we're working on, whether it's tree mitigation, new tree ordinances, our short-term rental stuff. She'll see articles on trends and things and share it with us. And so we definitely appreciate her input. During the town shutdown and the COVID crisis, Teresa set up reception in her home. She allowed for seamless transition for the citizens to continue to receive necessary planning and zoning information. She goes above and beyond with the citizens. We had a FOIA request recently where she was able to locate 20-year-old documents, and that's no easy feat in our department. And so she definitely goes above and beyond. And all this on a 25-hour part-time position, and that's for no lack of trying. We try to get her to go full-time, but she has a very talented young daughter at the School of Arts who's in the orchestra, so that keeps her busy. And we have to try to keep her from other departments stealing her as well. So we're definitely lucky to have her, and we appreciate everything she does, Teresa. So happy 5 years.
Thank you.
And I'll give that to you.
Thank you so much. The next item on the agenda is item 5, annexations, 5A, 1605 Highway 41.
Okay. Thank you very much. Happy to be here this morning. This is 1605 Highway 41. It is a request to annex just under 2 acres located off of Highway 41. Bless you. It is, here you can see in the aerial off of Highway 41. It is recommended for settlement community land uses, so it's going to automatically come in as community conservation. It's improved with a single family residence, and it's really hard to see, but it is contiguous across the river to Rivertown PD, and so that is what provides its contiguity, and that's why they are able to annex in. And I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Move to approve.
Second.
We have a motion to approve and a second. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Recommendation to council is approval. Item number B, David Green Road.
Okay.
This is a request to annex an approximately 0.73 acre tract of land. It is at 2215 David Green Road. As you can see there, it is recommended for settlement community land uses as well. It's contiguous as it backs up to the community conservation there, and this is off of 6 Mile as you're headed back to Palmetto there. And as I said, it will come in as community conservation, so I'm happy to answer any questions.
Move for approval.
Second.
We have a motion to approve and a second. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries. Item number 6, review of planning commission recommendations, item A.
Okay. So as you all have heard from a couple of times, we've been working with Tyson and his law firm. They have been working on the Shim Creek zoning district. This is a recommendation from our comprehensive plan to fulfill this. It's also part of our zoning code rewrite. And so it did go to Planning Commission for a public hearing. And so Tyson is going to present that to you now. And
you're so quick.
Yeah. Looking for that. Don't have it. Okay. I'm just going to go through for you.
Okay.
Is that okay?
Sure. If you can put it here, I can tap it.
Yeah. Okay.
That's perfect. Okay. Perfect. Okay. Good afternoon. Good to be with you once again. What I would like to do is catch you up on what's happened since you last took this up on July 6th, what some of the Planning Commission's deliberations involved, what some of the changes they made were. In a couple instances, things they debated changing, but ultimately decided not to. And then, of course, to answer any questions you have. So they met initially in a workshop format on the 21st for review of the proposed ordinance. And then on August 18th, held a public hearing. Just to set some context, since it's been a while, and I know y'all have had a lot to focus on since then, we are implementing the Shim Creek Area Management Plan as our guide here. It's important to remember that the Shim Creek Area Management Plan includes both zoning and non-zoning types of recommendations, for example, regarding parking, so more on that later, but there are things that we can attack through the zoning ordinance or address through the zoning ordinance and some things that are that don't fit that mold. And also to make a point that the ordinance you've been given for this meeting will be maybe changed to some degree in terms of what it needs to be, what needs to be done to codify it, numbering, formatting, that sort of thing. Again, just a background reminder, we're establishing 3 new base districts along Shim Creek. You may remember that there was some discussion over whether this would be an overlay district. We went back and forth on this with staff. What we found the most common theme to be for these properties was the presence on Shim Creek. However, these 3 districts, or these areas that were designated in 3 different ways by the plan, were quite different in terms of the types of land uses that were there. So ultimately, it was decided that the easiest thing and the cleanest thing was to establish these 3 base districts. And that's the same framework we had when we met last time. Generally, the revisions we've made involved a number of areas, including some new definitions, things like personal watercraft, water-dependent, water-related. There's some new conditional conditional use conditions that were created, 10% cap on impervious surfaces in parking lots. We distinguish between public, private, and commercial boat launches and docks between the 3 districts. And then other than that, if the ordinance isn't changed in the draft you got, the presumption is that it's staying the same. That is the rest of the code. So what hasn't changed since we last met? The focus remains on properties that are adjacent to the creek and operations that are oriented to the creek. Let's see here. Design and vegetation requirements have not changed, but you'll see with the asterisk there, there will be some changes brought to the Planning Commission at its meeting in September. I'll touch on those here in a minute. We've kept small increases in required parking for restaurants and outfitters and excursions, and I want to touch on that here. I'll just get all this out of the way. This exhibit here is from the Shim Creek Area Management Plan. Your current requirements for restaurants are between 1 and 2 spaces per 100 square feet That's a range. The plan just simply required or recommended that the base be brought up to 1.25 spaces. This obviously has raised the question of, well, where would they go? You know, we've already got, you know, pressures on space, but it's also the counter to the question of, well, we don't have enough parking. We need to make sure we're capturing all the demand that's being created. So the Planning Commission went back and forth on this, considered this, and decided ultimately to pass it through with this additional requirement in there. But just to be clear, the requirement is really taking the required minimum from one space to 1.25 spaces. So not particularly dramatic. In addition, the plan called for adding or capturing the demand that's created by certain excursion uses that may not be reflected in the way you calculate the demand for parking now, the parking requirement now, because it's tied to actual paddle boards or boats or kayaks that may be stored on the property but wouldn't necessarily be required to have parking, even though they generate a demand for parking because somebody may drive there and get in the kayak, et cetera. Staff went back and forth on this. Planning Commission went back and forth on this. It presents some administrative challenges that are new. It'd be capturing the existence of a trailer of kayaks. It may sound a bit tedious, but it's meaningful because that could be, you know, 6 to 12 more people that are there. In jurisdictions like this one, take a Myrtle Beach or a lot of Florida jurisdictions, they do account for this, but they do require parking for these types of uses, but it does require a little bit more coordination, probably with your building, your business license department and that sort of thing. So you're aware of those impacts being incurred. So that's still in the ordinance as it was when we met on July 6th. I wanted to mention this. I referenced non-zoning and zoning challenges that the area management plan took up, and specifically related to parking. There's been a lot of talk, of course, lately about the challenges of parking in Shem Creek. Some of them are related to zoning, some of them are not. This is a slide I prepared for the Planning Commission as we went into their second meeting, and it decided it does need to take a comprehensive look at parking. Some of that can be taken up in this rewrite process of Shem Creek District, but some of it will have to be bigger than that and not to hold up the whole process to trying to adjust trying to respond to all of those concerns. So the first two bullets here you can see is that balance I was talking about earlier, lack of available parking, but limited space for new or rebuilt uses. Some parking being converted, almost all parking being converted to paid parking in the area. Neighborhood impacts, if you decrease the requirement for parking, those cars tend to float into the neighborhoods. We've talked about all this over time, but I just want to lay out here and just remind us of the sort of scope of these challenges we'll get regarding parking. The Shem Creek waterfront district boundaries have not changed since we last met. The point came up, I believe, from this committee on July 6th of whether the parking garage property should be moved into the Shem Creek hospitality district. And we discussed this with the Planning Commission and with staff, and then sort of my own look at it. And my sense is that it would be a very awkward fit. I get the concern, but it would be an awkward fit to just simply move it into a waterfront district. If you look at the uses that are allowed there and the setbacks that are addressed for those properties that are actually fronting Shem Creek and are of the nature of the restaurants, et cetera, there, it would be a bit awkward to then put those uses onto the parking garage property that's more oriented toward Coleman and the Boulevard Overlay District. Could be done, it would just be somewhat awkward. So this map shows how it's currently zoned. It's area-wide business at the portion fronting Coleman, AB2 on the part fronting Ronnie Bowles. The use is allowed as a conditional use in that district, but the height is non-conforming. So theoretically, there could be a point in the future where, due to abandonment of the garage or destruction of the garage, the height would have to be brought back into compliance. But on the other hand, the way the nonconformity provisions are written now, that probably wouldn't happen for the foreseeable future. In other words, zoning itself will probably not do anything to the existence of the garage. So at this point, we did not expand the waterfront districts to include the parking garage property. And then finally, height. Nothing's changed here, but I bring it up just because it's always a point of interest with everyone. Right now, the height in most of Shim Creek is 40 feet, standard townwide limit with the 5 feet extra due to flood. There is a portion of it that's in the BOD that takes it up to 45. But at the end of the day, here's what we'd have. In the working districts that are sort of at the edges in the middle, that's 40 feet now. It would stay 40 feet based on the requirements, excuse me, on the recommendations of the plan. That hospitality district in green, the middle part, is currently 40 feet. It would go to 45. That's what the plan recommended. I think if you recall, the reason for that was likely that not to have higher buildings that are out there today, but many of them are greater or more like 50 feet. And I think this was seen as sort of a compromise to take it from 40 feet to an allowed 45, and that would meet the current requirement and the current types of properties that are out there in the middle. Same thing with the natural area that's in blue there. It's 40 or 45 parts of it, and it's proposed to be 45, just like the hospitality area. So again, that hasn't changed since we last met. Okay, there have been some changes since we last met. The first is a straightforward one. It was the renaming of the districts to sort of highlight that contiguity between the three of them to Shim Creek Waterfront District, Working, and Hospitality and Natural. That's just a shuffling of words, really. The Planning Commission did recommend that boutique hotel or inn use be removed from the Shim Creek Waterfront District Hospitality, that one in the middle there, as a use that was allowed by right in an initial draft when we met the first time. And then we had staff make some changes to the way the setback regulations were worded and structured, but content-wise, those haven't changed. We basically specified that for purposes of determining setbacks, the orientation would be to the creek, just like it normally would be to, you know, a road in front of a parcel. And we added some illustrations to highlight how that is calculated. I mentioned proposed changes to the design standards and vegetation standards. Staff is in the process of working up a series of revisions that will be folded into this process starting at the Planning Commission meeting this month. These standards are expected to include something along these lines. As I noted earlier, Shim Creek itself is defined as the primary street for design purposes. There's a view plane for how buildings would relate to that orientation. Flat roofs would be prohibited. Primary building material would be wood, in quotes. So according to your current code, wood includes materials that look like wood, and I'm sure there's somebody here who can give more detail on that if you need it. Elevated buildings obviously have to meet flood regulations, but there would be design standards that try to give the appearance of the bottom floor being a ground floor and not just being an elevated area. In terms of site standards, stand-up curbing would not be required. Diamond-shaped parking islands with sable palms are expected. Native vegetation would be required. Perimeter buffers only. I assume there's a perimeter buffers around the district, or those around the parcel?
District.
District, okay. So that wouldn't interrupt the flow between the parcels. And bike racks and raised planters would be encouraged, but not required. So the detail related to those items in the last two slides will be forthcoming. I'll wrap up with where we're going from here, and then I guess we can open up for questions. Town Council will have first reading on this next week, and then the Planning Commission will have a public hearing on those design guidelines on September 22nd. On the 4th of October, this committee will review those design standards for recommendation, and Town Council will have second reading of the zoning district changes on October 12th, along with first reading of the design guidelines, and then finally on November 9th, the second reading on the design guidelines. So that's how that will play out. And that's all I have. I'll be happy to answer questions or.
Thank you so much for that presentation and the update. Committee members, do you have any questions? Mr. Chapman?
Madam Chairman, I don't have a question, but I want to, for the record, state that we're doing this based on Shim Creek Area Management Plan and also the Comprehensive Plan, as was provided to us in the presentation, there will be public hearings before the Planning Commission. And as such, I'm sorry, but there were some comments made earlier in our meeting that we weren't doing this. And why were we doing this? Because of a particular project. We're not doing this for any project. We're doing it in compliance with what was suggested in the comprehensive plan. We're doing this in compliance with what was suggested in the area management plan for Shem Creek, which was done several years ago. So that's the whole purpose of which we're concentrating on the Shem Creek Waterfront District, nothing else.
Thank you, Mr. Chapman. Any other comments or questions?
I'm just thinking about the whole parking versus demand versus parking mm-hmm. concept. You would think that that would be so organic because I won't go anywhere that I can't park. I just don't want to deal with the stress. But so other municipalities are doing things like I think I've seen people just straight up when you go to their website say, hey, there's no parking, you better Uber. But I wonder why that's not an organic sort of process. You know, do we expect those businesses to still thrive with no parking? Right? Does that make sense, what I'm
yes,
saying?
Yes, it does.
I think it's going to be cool to listen to public comment and hear what the commission has to say as well. Because I see the demand. I think it's going to be beautiful. But that parking and noise. But we do respond to complaints from neighbors, right, about noise. Like, we respond to those.
Yes, ma'am.
And then they're handled.
Yes, we'll visit the entity, the restaurant, or whoever the person's complaining about and assess it for ourselves. And if there is truly a noise situation, we ask them to come into compliance.
Okay.
And then I have a question about the working waterfront and what that encompasses, because there was a public comment raised earlier about the concern of restaurants and working waterfront being converted into all a bunch of restaurants. What can you explain that a little bit more?
Sure. Let me pull up the full list of land uses in working waterfront. I'll walk you through it. Oh, what do you know?
Okay.
Yeah. So this district was created by basically blending the recommendations of the area management plan and the underlying zoning that was there before. The area management plan didn't necessarily recommend, as I recall, restaurants and that end of it, but the underlying zoning, as I recall, did allow it. So what we wanted to do is sort of make a compromise there and have proposed keeping restaurant as an allowed use there, since there clearly is a restaurant there. But that does have an implication. It is now indicated to be allowed as a by right use, which means that any restaurants there now could be replaced. Any with outdoor dining would require conditional use. But again, the only condition related to outdoor dining right now in Shem Creek or in general is related to amplified sound. So that would be a pretty easy one to meet. But that would be a use that, you know, could go into any property there. It's not just limited to the current restaurant there.
All right, thank you.
Yeah.
Ms. Hyatt?
Well, it does list on 1N and 2E restaurants. So we're saying things can be converted to restaurants.
Correct.
That exist. But we already
Well, anything could be. This would apply to all properties in those purple areas in that district.
And we already allow them in the green and the is it green and blue?
It is the other district in the hospitality district, correct?
And this is supposed to be our working area, so
right. That's kind of that's my concern as well.
You know, we already have areas where they're allowed.
Would this continue to be working waterfront if restaurants were permitted? Would it eventually all convert to restaurants, and then we would no longer have a working waterfront?
Right.
That's kind of my concern.
So we could consider removing restaurants from the working area?
And we have a non-conforming ordinance that would allow a rebuild of a restaurant already in place there to rebuild what they have if there was a catastrophe of some sort. But I hesitate to do anything that's going to incentivize the shift away from a working waterfront.
Right.
Mr. Chapman?
No, I agree.
Me too. Do we need a motion? Do we, or is this just a recommend, just a, can you just hear from us the recommendation sort of maybe to update this to remove restaurants from a by right use?
Yeah, I think a motion is definitely appropriate because from here we'll take it to council next week and then we'll mention with this proposed revision from right. committees.
Right. Do I have a motion?
But.
I move to remove restaurants as a permitted use in our in the working district.
Second.
We have a second. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
All right. Thank you so much. Do we have anything further on this area?
Oh, on this area, no.
No.
I might ask a clarification just because I know it's unclear to me, so I know I'll be asking staff. Is that just to take it out as a permitted use, but to allow it as a conditional use?
Or do you want to remove it altogether? I would say remove it altogether, right?
I agree.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Remove it altogether. Okay. 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 So I can.
I don't think we need to, because I mean, you said remove it from by right. So I think let's just, it's understood that we mean that remove
completely.
Restaurants completely
okay.
from this,
okay.
from working waterfront, because that's not working waterfront.
No.
A restaurant's not working waterfront.
Thank you for that.
Mm-hmm. All right. Do we have anything further on item A?
No. When we mentioned the heights, you're saying 40 or 45. I mean, where are we? When is that going to be nailed down?
It is nailed down, but let me go back and explain what I meant there.
Do we want anything
oh, okay,
taller or stay with what we have?
Yeah, even better.
Stay at 40.
Slide here. Okay. So if you look at this one, there's a portion. I think I have a graphic here.
Yeah.
There's a portion of the new district that's in the BOD, and you can see it's in that oval there. Right there, unlike the rest of Shem Creek, height today is 45 feet. The rest of the Shem Creek area is 40 feet. The area management plan recommended that hospitality and natural districts, so the middle part and the part further inland, be 45 feet instead of 40. So that will be true for all of those two areas, not either or. The last graphic was just a little less precise in terms of what it is now. So it'll be 45 feet in hospitality and natural and 40 feet in working.
And what was the justification for the increase in height from 40 to 45 for hospitality and natural?
I believe that it was to reflect existing buildings and them being greater than 40 feet and maybe being greater than 45 feet, but being closer to 50 feet in general. So the theory was instead of them now being 10 feet out of conformance, they would now be 5 feet out of conformance. But theoretically, if one went away and had to be built back and wasn't captured by the non-conforming provisions, it would have to go back 5 feet than it is now if it's 50 feet. Is that a pretty good?
Mm-hmm.
That's my take on it.
But they are captured by our non-conforming ordinance, right? So they could rebuild.
Well, I've got a note to make sure we talk about that next week in detail. And we can talk, I think I want to talk about specifically the height and how it could be built back under your new non-conforming statutes and also ordinances and also the restaurant question.
Yeah, I'm comfortable leaving it at 40 feet. Like, I don't see there to be a reason to raise it to 45 just so it's a little less non-conforming. I think again, how we zone this is going to create the incentives for future development, and if the other working district is 40 feet, I think, you know, we want to keep the skyline clear. We want to have views of the creek, and I think that a lower height is better. So I think staying where we are with 40 feet is where I'm more comfortable.
Is that agree?
Yes. Do we need a motion to, in that regard? All right. Does anyone want to make that motion? You want to make that motion?
Yeah. You want
okay. Oh, I'm chair. So.
Oh, okay. Okay. I'd like to move that we leave the height, max height at 40 feet.
Do we have a second?
Second.
All right. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. We're going to do 40 feet. So the two main changes would be to remove restaurants from the working district and keep the height at 40 feet for the Shem Creek area plan. Oh, Ms. Hyatt.
And the last thing. So we did end up taking hotels, inns, boutiques, and any type of hotel out, right? That's already been done.
Correct.
Okay.
Great. All right. Thanks so much. Is that everything else on item A? All right. Moving on to item B, a request to amend the ION PD by revising neighborhood standards.
Okay. This is a request to, as you said, amend the ION plan development, specifically to revise their neighborhood standards with regards to how they measure the footprint of outbuildings. So, yeah, I think y'all are familiar with ION, so I will skip over the map. So the request is to amend, as I mentioned, how we measure maximum footprint. The ION PD does not have a definition for footprint. So whenever it lacks information or a definition, then we revert, when we're reviewing plans, we revert back to the town ordinances. So they currently permit that outbuildings should have a maximum footprint of 625 square feet. Because there's no definition for footprint, we look back at our town ordinance, the area footprint, which is defined as the portion of the lot area that is covered by the maximum horizontal cross-section of any portion of a building or structure and includes two-dimensional coverage, specifically including such elements as steps, decks, terraces, and roof and eave structure. This definition counts the perimeter of the eave overhang toward buildable footprint. So there's been some different interpretations over the years, and I know that at one point, I believe ION, when we reviewed their outbuildings, eaves were not included. And based on this area footprint, it would be included in the 625 square feet. So on top of that, in February of last year, we amended our zoning code to exclude eaves and roof overhangs from impervious surface. And what I'm getting at here is these definitions for ION code are based on our town code, and you're probably going to see some changes with our zoning code rewrite, kind of making this more consistent, because we have building coverage, building footprint, area footprint, so all these things that we need to probably fix with our zoning code rewrite. But if you look at the impervious surface setback definition that was amended, that specifically excludes it. And we think that's probably a good way to look at it. If it's excluded from impervious surface, why would you necessarily include it in your footprint? But it's not crystal clear. And because it's not clear in the town ordinance and it's not clear in the ION PD, ION has requested that they amend their PD to make it crystal clear. So, the development standards such as eaves, one thing to keep in mind, development standards such as eaves and building overhangs encroaching into a setback are still regulated. So we have another section in our ordinance that says sills and eaves may protrude into a required yard setback, a distance not more than 2 feet. So the ION assembly is requesting that while you not include eaves and overhangs in their 625 square footprint. When we calculate that, there is still the provision that would allow no more than 2 feet into a side setback or a yard setback. And so there are some protective measures in place. So it did go to the Planning Commission. They recommended approval of this proposed text. The one thing they did add was building before footprint. So the proposed text before you is outbuildings. And one thing to keep in mind too is ION has a lower footprint for their accessory structure. When I say outbuilding, it's the same as our town's accessory structures. We allow up to 750 square feet. They have limited theirs to 625 square feet. So the proposed text before you is that outbuildings shall have a maximum building footprint of 625 square feet and building height of 18 feet. Notwithstanding the foregoing, roof structures, including but not limited to eaves and overhangs, shall not be included in the footprint calculation. And this is what is proposed so that it would be made clear that when somebody comes in for a building permit and the eaves or overhangs exceed that 625 square feet, that it would be crystal clear that that is not calculated in the footprint. I know that's a little convoluted, but so I'm happy to answer questions.
The question I have is, with the 625 square feet, by excluding the eaves,
that would allow the base footprint to be larger than currently, right? Because the eaves extend beyond. Is that so essentially this change would permit larger outbuildings in Ion?
It would. I mean, the way that it's calculated, yes, it would. And one of the concerns the Planning Commission had with the language was that it said including but not limited to. They didn't recommend it be revised, but they did have some concern about sort of the open-endedness of that. But the one thing that there is still in place is that you can't have anything encroach into the setback more than 2 feet. So I think the Assembly probably thought that was a little bit of a protective measure that still limited what could and could not encroach. But yes, that's essentially what it would allow.
And if we do not approve this change, then it will remain reliant upon the town's definition, which we will be amending later on.
Yeah, I think we'll be looking at all these as we move forward with our zoning code rewrite. Like I said, we have area footprint, building coverage, and then we have impervious surface. And with that new impervious surface definition, it doesn't really align with our footprint definition. And so those are things that we're going to be looking at with the code rewrite.
Well, I feel like Ion is already a very tightly packed, development, and increasing the building footprint by removing eaves from the measurements to me seems is going to create an even more crowding in that development. And since we're going to be clarifying things in the town anyway with our zoning, I'm comfortable with denying this and letting it rely upon the town's definitions, which we will be doing in an updated zoning. But that's how I feel about it. I don't know how the rest of the committee feels about it. Mr. Chapman?
Yeah, I feel that way as well. But I'm anxious to hear, and I know we've got some representatives here from the engineering department, why would eaves, or particularly the overhang, not be included in impervious surface? It doesn't make sense to me, because it's an area that you're not draining, that you're draining to, but yet you're not including it in like a piece of asphalt. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if we could hear an answer to that. They may not be prepared to respond,
yeah.
but it doesn't, yeah. I know from what Ms. Reed said that they felt that was not part of it. Is that, looks like we can get an answer.
Good evening, Mr. Chapman, members of the committee. Just real briefly, I was the author and creator of the impervious surface definition, and the intent was to create more pervious material on the ground. So if like decks, wooden decks, things of that nature, the water would actually go through decks and then percolate through the soil underneath. So under that same intent and objective, if water comes off the roof and the eave doesn't actually cover the ground itself, then water actually has a chance to infiltrate into the soil underneath the eave. Mm. So from that perspective, that's why it was eliminated.
Even though it may be a driveway underneath.
Well, then the driveway would count towards impervious surface because it does cover the ground. So that would be impervious surface.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Thank you.
Hope that helps.
Thank you. Ms. Hyatt,
I just remember when we discussed this last year. We said February?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, when we voted to. We had a discussion about it, not including the overhang.
But do we have a motion on this issue?
I'd like to move to deny.
Second.
We have a motion to deny and a second. Any further discussion? All those in favor of the motion to deny?
Aye.
All right, motion carries. Item number C, Oyster Park Impact Assessment and Plan Development Ordinance.
Okay. Before you is two separate requests related to the development known as Oyster Park. The first is to rezone from area-wide business to a planned development district ordinance, and the second is review and approval of an impact assessment and a conceptual plan. So I think all of you are familiar with Oyster Park. It is located off Ben Sawyer. adjacent to New Parish Village, New Parish Road. And as you can see here in our current zoning map, it is all zoned AB, area-wide business. The future land use does have it as community scale commercial. And this goes back a little bit, just a little bit of history. It was originally approved and developed in accordance with the AB zoning, and it was in the Urban Corridor Overlay District, which is now called the Boulevard Overlay District. So at the time, it was built according to AB and the Urban Corridor Overlay. It came in different phases. At first, it's also been known as Mount Pleasant Square. Phase one was in 1997. That included the buy-low and adjacent retail. And here is the existing site plan, so you can see kind of what's going on there. So phase one was buy-low. Buy-low is about 103,000 square feet, and the adjacent retail. And then phase two came in multiple times, but it was around 2005, 2007. We had additional commercial, and then we had the multifamily development that exists today. So as it is now, it's about 13.57 acres. It's a mixed-use development. It currently consists of 269 multifamily units and the adjacent shopping center. It was constructed at approximately 18.7 units an acre, and the DRB approved plans show it's at about 50 feet at its highest point. In 2018, as you'll recall, Town Council made changes to the overlay district. It went from urban corridor to boulevard overlay. And then we also removed that section from rifle range to the bridge. So in 2018, this was removed from the boulevard overlay district. So the only restrictions it has on it now is AB. So that left it somewhat non-conforming with regards to height and density. As it exists today, and as it's known in its mixed-use development, it still has the 269 multifamily units, and it's got just under 144,000 square feet of shopping center. So they proposed to zone it from AB to PD. So that's the first part of the request. That rezoning is, first of all, to basically make what's existing conforming. So to make the 269 multifamily conforming, which wouldn't be allowed necessarily at that density under AB without the overlay. Also with the height, it's proposed to, the PD would make that conforming. But there's three other things that the PD is proposing. One is to increase the height a little bit on the building that's going to replace the bylow. A little bit of deviation from the buffers, and then they have done a ULI parking study. So they proposed this site plan, and as you can see, the bylow is pretty, just to get your bearings, the bylow is the large kind of yellow beige building. So it's a really wide building. So what they are proposing is that would go away and you would have that more narrow pink office and retail, two floor. And then you would also have more office up front, as you can see on the left-hand side. As I said, they are requesting variation from three specific standards, so I'm going to kind of jump into those. And then I have some changes based on Planning Commission's review as well. So when they first came in to Planning Commission, they had their public hearing. They were proposing a 10-foot buffer, and they were showing these buffer encroachment locations. So if you turn it a little bit, if you see to the left, that's actually where the bylow is. So adjacent to North Point on the north, there is a 45-foot abandoned easement. They are proposing, they were proposing basically no buffer there, and then a modified buffer adjacent to New Parish Village, which is a single-family residential development. Under our what's in place there now is vested, non-conforming, but obviously the redevelopment of the site means that they have to bring it into conformance. The PD does allow them to write their own standards, and so that's what they have proposed. They originally proposed a about an 8-foot buffer along New Parish Village with an encroachment where you can see the green arrow. And then they proposed no buffer along North Point because there's already a 45-foot vegetated buffer there. New Parish, at Planning Commission, folks from New Parish Village came and wanted to, they were upset. They wanted a larger buffer. And so at the Planning Commission, it was determined that, and you can see here, so instead of an 8-foot buffer, this would be adjacent to New Parish Village, they are now proposing a 20-foot Type E buffer, which was agreeable to the neighbors, and they will have to do a new 8-foot fence. There will still be a modification to the left, and that will be provided so that they have room for a drive through there. And then also one of the changes that came out of this, and the reason for the modification, they were planning on having parking. So you can see over to the left, they were going to have all those parking spots, and that's why they were asking for the modified buffer. What they're proposing now is reduction of their parking, which they had plenty of, and they are allowing for parallel parking. So there will be parallel parking along New Parish Village, and there will be a 20-foot Type E proposed buffer.
Could you explain Type B?
It's... Yeah, Type B buffer is 3 canopy trees, 5 understory, 15 shrubs per 100 feet. It's a B buffer. And then they'll have to do an 8-foot fence.
And the fence is wooden?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And as I mentioned, originally it was supposed to be, they were proposing an 8-foot buffer. Folks from New Parish Village came and spoke, and then they agreed upon the 20-foot with the modification to their parking there.
Didn't the residents want 25? And then there was something to cut down to 18?
Yeah, there was discussion about it being 18 when they took out the parking, but what would be required under today's standards, because it's not in the overlay, would be a 25-foot. And during the Planning Commission meeting, it was sort of agreed upon that there would be the fence, there would not be the parking facing New Parish Village so that they would have headlights in their backyard, they would do the parallel parking instead, and that would allow for the 20-foot buffer.
I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, go ahead, Mr. Chapman. My initial question is why can they not achieve what they need to achieve with their underlying zoning? Because to me, moving to a planned development where they are, you know, set to their own unique state. I mean, I think this area does need some redevelopment. It's been sitting empty for a while. That something needs to go there that would be provide amenities to the community. But an increase in building height, I don't like that. That's something that we, as a council, have made decisions on. Previously, I think that that's problematic. And then also, I'm just not understanding, you know, if they're redeveloping one section of this property, it seems like it's an AB. It seems like it fits within AB. I don't understand why they need a plan development.
Well, I mean, I think the applicants here, they can speak more to why they decided to go with the plan development. All I can say is I think it probably stemmed from the fact that there are some non-conforming uses there right now. And they wanted to capture all of that as a mixed use in a plan development and then create these standards so that they could deviate from our town code. Because the AB, as you know, is straight zoning and wouldn't allow for any variances of that effect unless they went to the Board of Zoning Appeals.
Okay.
But I think the applicant's here, I presume. No?
No.
Okay.
All right. Sorry, please continue.
Well, that's okay. Okay, so buffers is the first thing. The second thing, as you mentioned, is the height. So right now, as it exists, the multifamily units are 50 feet. We have maximum 50-foot height. 40-foot high around there. What is allowed today is 35 feet high at 40 if you're in a flood zone. What they are proposing, their second deviation would be an amendment to the height map to allow the building that's replacing the bylow to go up to 48 feet high. And they have provided the justification for that, showing that their distance from New Parish Village. So if they were in the overlay right now, it would be a maximum 45 feet height. Obviously, they're not in the overlay, so it's 35 feet. But there is this requirement that says that if you're within a certain distance from residential outside of the overlay, you can go up to a certain height. So what they tried to show and justify was that they are a distance away from New Parish Village that justifies the 48 feet that they are requesting. And so that's really the only deviation proposed. The 50 feet already exists, as I mentioned, with the multifamily. That's the second deviation, the 48 feet in height. And then the third would be the parking. They did submit a ULI study. Our staff examined it. They are providing, the ULI report recommends 841 parking spaces. The developer is providing 930. This did change based on that buffer change and that parallel parking. They lost a few parking spots, but they are still exceeding the recommended 841. So staff is perfectly fine with the ULI study and the amount of parking. And so essentially what you're going to have is the proposed plan would still have the same multifamily. You would lose about 10,000 square feet of commercial, and you would gain 60,000 square feet of office. So this is the plan development. They also did an impact assessment and conceptual plan. Our transportation department, we have representation here for them. They did review the traffic counts, and they are comfortable with the impact assessment. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
This looks like a really nice project. Am I missing something? Because it looks really nice and like it's really needed. So we're worried about the 5 feet building height. Because is it blocking anything?
It would be a it would be a 30.
I'm fine with it. I'm fine with the height change.
Okay.
I want to do better on the buffer.
On the what?
On the buffer.
On the buffer, but the residents are happy with it, right? The residents are fine with it once they fixed it.
They seemed agreeable to it at the Planning Commission meeting, the residents that came and spoke.
And they still get another chance to voice their opinions. I just think it's a beautiful thing and badly needed. So do you guys, what are your concerns?
No, I tend to agree. I think this area is ripe for redevelopment. I think that, you know, having the bylaw property sit empty for a long period of time is not a positive thing for the community. My concern is the height increase requested, and I think the buffers as well. And I just want to understand what they cannot do with their underlying zoning, like why they want to move to a PD. That's what I really want to understand. And I understand that the issue with the non-conforming, but you know, they're permitted to keep that as it is. So I don't understand why it needs to be moved to a PD. Ms. Hyatt, do you have anything?
They're hoping to build another mixed use type development.
So
this would have apartments upstairs and retail underneath, like the place next door?
No, there's no residential proposed.
No.
So what they're proposing to do is tear down the bylaw and then build in its place office and retail. So the overall plan, the multifamily would stay what it is. They would reduce their commercial by about 10,000 square feet, and they would add 60,000 square foot of office. That's the exchange.
I mean, are they locked into that once this changes? They could change their plan, right?
Would the PD reflect the limitation on residential, I think, is what your question is.
Oh, yes. They stayed in there. There's no proposal to do additional
residential. An increase in residential, because I think that would be the primary concern. Mm-hmm. I think this is the kind of development we want in the community to provide more retail and office space for companies to come in.
With plenty of parking.
Looks beautiful. So do we have a
I think, I guess the one concern I have is with the height increase, because it's currently 35 feet, is that correct? And then this would be bumping it up to 48 feet?
But that building there, I thought, was already 45. It's just non-conforming, right? Am I wrong?
I don't know.
I'm sorry. So that, the current building right there is currently 45 or 40? They're just non-conforming?
Next door is.
Yeah,
50.
Next door is 50, right?
This is the current height right now.
I see.
So they're, what they're doing is tearing down the portion that's by low. They're not tearing everything down. And what they would build back in Bylow's place, they are asking for 48 feet height. Right now, what's allowed under our current ordinance is 35 feet height.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm fine with that, guys. But, yeah.
All right, do we have a motion?
I'd make a motion. We approve or recommend?
Recommend approval. Do we have a second?
I'll second for discussion.
What are the buffers under the current AB zoning?
So, current AB zoning would require, let me get to a good, okay. So, flip this as if you're standing on Ben Sawyer looking, and straight ahead to the left is where the bylaw would be. That is adjacent to single family residential. So outside, when it was constructed under the overlay, it required a type C buffer. Now that it's not in the overlay, today it would require a type E buffer, 25-foot type E buffer. And then adjacent to North Point, because that's a vacant strip of land, that would be a 10-foot type B buffer. So 10-foot type B, 25-foot type E adjacent to the single-family residential.
And their proposal is a 20-foot buffer?
Their proposal is a 20-foot type E buffer for the section that is not green. And the section that is green, they're proposing closer to about an 8-foot to allow room for the two-way drive aisle. And then they're not proposing essentially any buffer along the North Point because there's that 45-foot vegetated buffer, so that was their justification.
I think that parallel parking was a great idea, so you don't have headlights shining.
If I may, too, staff has some concerns we would just like to make a part of the record along the streetscape. Some of the businesses there, we've met with Dominion Energy, and some of the businesses there have raised, elevated those trees so that you can obviously have more visual exposure for the business. And what's happening is they're raising the trees, and then Dominion's having to come in and trim the trees to see how their lines. And the area kind of between the tea place and Kid Cashew,
Amber,
we anticipate that there's going to be some.
Do we hear that sound?
Okay. What is it? We're going to check.
Okay.
We anticipate there's going to be some trees removed from Dominion for safety reasons. And so we would like to, while they're going through this process, get that on the record and ask that they work with Dominion and work with staff on the proper replacement of those trees so that we don't have this problem moving forward. Because they had proposed just to maintain what they had there, but we do know that there's going to have to be some tree removals along the front for Dominion from their part. So.
All right. Do we have any other discussion or thoughts? I think I'm concerned about an 8-foot buffer when there should be a 25-foot buffer. That's
my
concerning.
Biggest concern.
That's a concern of concern to me.
But I did hear staff say that they've agreed. They being the developers have agreed to 20. Is that correct?
They
only
agreed
in certain sections.
Right. Just on the section where you don't see the green. So where you see the white there. They've agreed to the 25-foot there. They mm-hmm. still need the buffer encroachment for that two-way drive aisle.
Okay. Well, then.
That's what they're proposing.
That's my biggest concern. That, the one with the green as well as the other, I think instead of 20, it should be 25. Other than that, I'm fine with it, and I'm fine with the height. But I would also include the staff's concern to work on the Ben Sawyer side as well. And if I need to do that after we move this and then add an amendment, I'm happy to do that. Or I'm happy to deny and then come back with a revised motion.
Or should we withdraw the motion and maybe defer this? Because I really wish that the developer had come today so that they could speak to these things and help give us a greater clarity on why they want an 8-foot buffer when it should be 25 feet and the justification of the increase in height. I think those are the two things, the two concerns I have. I'm happy deferring this. I'm not comfortable making a recommendation either way to full council for a Tuesday vote. Mm-hmm. How does the rest of committee feel about that?
I'm fine with delay.
Okay. So do we have a withdrawal of them?
I'll withdraw it.
Withdraw?
I'll withdraw my second.
All right, great. Do I have a motion to defer?
I move to defer.
Second.
You have a motion to defer and a second. Any further discussion? All right, we need to defer this for 1 month and hopefully get some more information and a greater understanding of this project. I think potentially this could be a really great thing for the Ben Sawyer Boulevard, but I think we need to know a little bit more. Item number D, amend zoning code with permit allocation.
Yes, ma'am. This is just a quick fix. It came to our attention. As you know, the building permit allocation system is set up to allocate permits on a 6-month cycle.
I move for approval, Madam Chairman.
Second. We have a motion to approval and a second. Any discussion? All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. Motion carries. Next is modifications of yard regulations.
Mm-hmm. So this came up at the request of the chairman of the Board of Zoning Appeals. He asked that this come to the committee for discussion. We took it to the commission, and now we are back with our proposed amendments. And if you'll recall, essentially what it is, the way our current definition of setbacks is outlined in our ordinance, if these older lots, for an example, on McCants, our current ordinance would say your side property line or your property line adjacent to your neighbor is actually your front setback. And obviously it doesn't make sense on a lot of these older lots. And so they kept having to go to the Board of Zoning Appeals and get a variance to essentially rotate their setbacks. So what we have proposed is, first of all, that principal structures legally constructed prior to our first ordinance, which was adopted in 1979, is considered conforming. And then next, where a lot has street frontage that is wider than deep, like those lots on McCants, and was platted prior to the August 13th, 1979 ordinance, administrative relief may be granted in the following manner. And essentially what it's saying is, if you meet these conditions and staff can rotate your setbacks, but you have to be conforming to that rotation. Mm-hmm. So if we rotate administratively, say, yeah, this makes sense, we're going to make this your front setback, it has to be conforming to that, because if it doesn't conform to those previous setbacks when you rotate them, then it was probably never legally established. There's a problem there. And if that's the case, then we're going to go ahead and send you to the Board of Zoning Appeals to make it right. So this just grants some of those easier cases where if you rotate it on these older lots and it makes sense and it fits in with the neighborhood character and the patterns of the development along the street, then administratively we can rotate those setbacks.
Okay, great. Do we have a motion?
I move to approve.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion?
I think the motion needs to be that you approve, you move to approve staff recommendation.
Okay.
I move to approve staff recommendation.
Second.
All right. We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
All right. Motion carries. On to item number 7 on the agenda. This is discussion and action as well as review of the Planning Commission recommendations regarding town's definition of hotels, parking requirements, etc. in NC.
Okay, so I'm going to go, a little bit of this will be repetitive, and then there was some new information provided to Planning Commission, and then out of Planning Commission we have some recommendations. Based on those recommendations, I do have some draft text, so then I'll cover that at the end. So just as a quick refresher, we have two definitions for a hotel. We have, and they're very similar. The only difference is a boutique hotel currently includes an inn, and it's limited to 50 lodging units. Prior to an ordinance that was adopted in 2014, boutique hotels were not listed in our ordinance. Hotels in general were permitted in the NC district, as along with these other districts where they are currently still allowed. In 2014, as part of a larger code rewrite, we adopted the principal use table, and with that amendment came the creation of boutique hotels, and hotels were removed from NC and boutique hotels were stayed there. So in 2014, we took hotels out of the principal use table for NC and we created the boutique hotel to limit the use. Under our existing zoning, hotels are allowed in AB, AB2, Economic Development, and Waterfront Gateway. And then boutique hotels, as I mentioned, are permitted in the NC district as well. Hotels are also permitted in the Overlay District and various PD districts. And I think we went over this last time, kind of outlined what we currently have. So we have one hotel currently zoned neighborhood commercial, and it's also in the Old Village Historic District Overlay. It's the Old Village Post House. We have the Shem Creek Inn, which is zoned Marine District, and it's in the Shem Creek Overlay District. We have 20 hotels zoned PD, two of which are in the Boulevard Overlay, and then we have 8 hotels in the Boulevard Overlay, 2 of those PD, and 6 of them have an underlying AB. We did adopt our new comprehensive plan, which specifically talks about hotels and boutique hotels and their appropriate use in the community scale commercial, and then the applicable zoning districts for that land use. Just a little bit of history of our parking. Prior to that same 2014 ordinance, bless you. Prior to that same ordinance amendment, we also had different parking standards for hotels. So prior to 2014, as you can see in the strike through, for a hotel, you had one space per sleeping room, and then you had plus one space per each 3 employees. So 2014, we added boutique hotels and we lowered the standard for parking for hotels. So here's what we have now, 1 to 2 per guest room. While there's no definition for a guest room in our zoning code, because that standard was adopted in 2014 and our previous standard was sleeping room, guest room has been interpreted as a separately keyed lodging unit. That's how Law Insider has interpreted it and defined it. And based on that amendment from sleeping room to guest room, that's how staff has interpreted it over the years. Further, we have this range, 1 to 2, and this is consistent with other parking provisions in our code. As you can see, multifamily and duplex, you have 1.5 to 3, a church, 3 to 5. And this range came about because if the developer felt like they needed more parking than what was required, they had to go get a variance. And so the range was put in place so that they had a little bit of a window where they, if they needed more than the minimum, they could choose the 2 as opposed to the 1, and they wouldn't have to go to the Board of Zoning Appeals. One other thing to note is if a property is in the Boulevard Overlay District and it's non-residential, the parking may be reduced by 20%. So that's kind of what we have now. Those are our requirements, those are our definitions, and that's kind of where we've evolved over the years since the 2014 amendments. So we took it to the Planning Commission and expressed the concerns from the committee, talked about it, and what came out of Planning Commission is what I'm going to provide to you now. First of all, we needed a definition for a bedroom or sleeping room. It's pretty straightforward. It's a room used primarily for sleeping. The Planning Commission felt like the boutique hotel should stay as it is, but we should remove inn, and an inn should be allowed up to 10 rooms. And so that's what's proposed before you now. So we have a boutique hotel, and then we now have an inn, which is separately, that allows up to 10 lodging units. We put in a definition for sleeping room, and then we've changed our schedule of parking. So a lodging unit that contains 1 to 2 sleeping rooms would still have the 1 parking space, and anything above that would require an additional for each sleeping room. And then last, in the Boulevard Overlay District, and I suspect all this is going to change and go away as we're starting to work on the Boulevard Overlay District revisions anyway. But for now, if it's in the Boulevard Overlay District, we've added provisions that say, even if you're in the overlay, you're still subject to only the NC uses, which means you can't do a hotel because you're in the overlay. And then it also limits you to 6,000 square feet if your underlying is NC district. And last, we added in as its own principal use. It is permitted in neighborhood commercial. And again, it allows up to 10 lodging units per the Planning Commission's recommendation, and we removed a boutique hotel from the neighborhood commercial district. So that is what came out of Planning Commission, and I am happy to answer any questions.
Sorry, how are we defining lodging unit?
Lodging unit is, yeah.
Because you could have 10 four-bedroom lodging units, and then suddenly it's a 40-bedroom boutique, you know, inn, as opposed to a...
Well, that's why we defined a sleeping room. So a lodging unit is still the same as a guest room, which is that keyed, you could check in, you get 1 key fob, and it goes to 1 door, and there's 1 entrance and 1 exit. That is a lodging unit. Then we defined sleeping room, so that if you walk into your lodging unit and you have 3 sleeping rooms, then that is different and you have to provide additional parking.
See, I think that the reason for this discussion is all to provide clarity, to staff on a going forward basis, and to also have clarity for council to understand, and to, you know, as far as what is a hotel, what is a boutique hotel. Now this new definition of inn, I don't know if that's making things more complicated than necessary. And also I want to understand where our comprehensive plan lies with this, because I believe that in the comprehensive plan we shifted away from these linear districts and shifted away from to more the hub concept, mm-hmm. and where there were almost more hotel districts, where we said hotels are acceptable in these spaces. And so I would like to see the, and I'm asking if these amendments are moving us in the direction of our comprehensive plan and providing clarity now, you know, for now, as we move forward to adopting our comprehensive plan in the ordinances.
I think the best answer to your question is that these are some quick fixes while we, because the next phase of the zoning code rewrite is to look at all of our districts and to start looking at the redevelopment centers and the hubs and how do we turn that into our zoning code. So what you're talking about is definitely what we're going to be doing next. This kind of fixes for now some of the issues and the inconsistencies with our current zoning code and our new comp plan. But those things that you're talking about are the things we're going to delve into as we continue with the zoning code rewrite. Definitely.
Okay. And we don't currently, in these proposed amendments, have anything regarding parking for employees of these hotels, correct? And it used to have that, right, in the pre-2014 code. So is that something that would be possible to put back in there? Because I think that also creates issues as well, right? Like if you have a hotel and you have employees, where are they supposed to park? Mm-hmm. So I think potentially putting that back in.
So are you comfortable with the plus 1 space per each 3 employees?
Do we know why that was removed?
That was before my time. I'm not sure.
Okay.
I'm not sure.
Go ahead. Oh, Ms. Hyatt, go ahead. Do we have these things broken down in a simpler list so that we don't have to go item by item from the slideshow on the things we'd like to discuss? Things that have come up before, the definition of guest room, mm-hmm. and suite, and hotel and inn and parking? I mean, is there, do we have?
Well, we've got the definitions on this page. So right now we have a hotel and boutique hotel. And then based on Planning Commission's recommendations, they wanted to pull out the inn and create a definition for a bedroom or a sleeping room.
But I think that the problem is that lodging units still does not have a limit on sleeping rooms. And I think that was one of our primary concerns, was that you could have 50 lodging units that have four bedrooms apiece and then suddenly have 200 lodging, you know, and your boutique hotel is suddenly 200 sleeping right. units.
But you so have to provide parking for it. See, we're increasing
the
parking.
Oh, but under the current.
Right. And then also in the NC.
Sorry, Shima.
That's okay.
I think, ma'am, you were referring to the alternate versions.
Yes.
That were sent to planning.
Yes.
I just wanted to clarify which
ones.
Oh,
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Okay, I got you. That's up here. My apologies. Okay. This?
Yes, that makes it easier.
Okay.
Where we can go.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
For each definition, and then if anybody wants to.
Okay.
It's easier than flipping around through slides.
Gotcha. Okay.
Because I think these definitions include some things that you were asking about.
Okay.
Because we need to define guest room. This says any room in an inn, hotel, or containing one or more beds. And the guest suite is defined by two or more guest rooms.
Well, we've eliminated guest, based on the Planning Commission's, we took out guest room and we called it a sleeping room. So I guess we just want to make sure whatever we end up with, if we have a definition for it, it needs to be used somewhere in the text. If it's going away, then we don't need the definition for it. So that's why we didn't provide a definition for guest room, because we removed it.
Oh, Ms. Hyatt, go ahead. I think originally we were saying we needed to define guest room because it's the term used in our parking ordinance.
Right, but we took it out and replaced it with a sleeping room based on planning.
Well,
condition.
Okay, does a sleeping room, is any room containing one or more beds?
Mm-hmm. A sleeping room is a room used primarily for sleeping in. It's a bedroom, what you would think of as a bedroom.
And then for a suite, that would be two or more sleeping rooms?
Yeah. We didn't define suite, but we defined it through our parking schedule. So we said, if you have one to two sleeping rooms, then you have to provide one parking space. Anything above that, if you have three sleeping rooms, you have to provide an additional. If you have four, that's two more. If you have five, that's three more. So the limitations is, number one, through your 6,000 square foot, and it's also through your parking. So you would have to provide multiple parking that isn't required at this point.
Yeah, go ahead, Ms. Corley.
What would a room, this is so, we're still getting the weeds with this, but so if you have a space with a couch where you mm-hmm. can sleep, like a sofa bed, does mm-hmm. that count as a sleeping room?
No.
That's why this said excluding on this particular list.
Does it say that?
Yeah, on this list that she's showing now, but I don't, you know.
Madam Chairman,
yes,
could I ask about employees and their parking in each of these definitions, plus the requirement to have at least one person to be responsible and have space for that one person in the hotel, boutique hotel, inn. Are we?
Can we? I think that's been suggested on this list too. I'd love for this to move for this list to be forwarded to full council for review.
Definitely.
Okay.
This list right here.
All right, so we have a motion that this list of definitions be sent to full council for approval. Is this full list here?
Mm-hmm.
I've got an issue as well.
Mr. Chapman,
neighborhood commercial.
We don't have a second for your motion.
Oh.
For what motion?
To pass to full council. Okay, so we have a motion and a second. We're in discussion. Mr. Chapman.
Yeah, under discussion. We continue to have some type of a transient housing in neighborhood commercial, even though it's only 10 rooms with what's here. And I'm uncomfortable with transient housing adjacent to residential. And I know we have that in at least one place in town today and has been there for a while. But I'm uncomfortable with today's issues, bringing neighborhood or bringing transient housing into neighborhoods. And I would like to just take out any possible use for transient housing adjacent to neighborhoods.
Well, and that's, I tend to agree with you. I don't know why we need to create a whole new category of inns. I don't know that that's necessary. I am still concerned with this definition of lodging units versus sleeping rooms, because it's addressed in the parking, but it still doesn't address the limitations of what should be considered a boutique hotel. If a boutique hotel is 50, is it, like I said, if it's 50 lodging units, that could conceivably be as many bedrooms, as many sleeping units as, it could be 5 bedrooms, it could be 4 bedrooms. But if we say sleeping, if a boutique hotel should be based on maybe sleeping rooms rather than lodging units, that's where I'm concerned about the definitions.
These terms are using the term guest room, which could be changed to sleeping room, and then that counts. Clarify. Or we can use the term guest room if that's what council prefers.
And then guest suite is 2 or more guest rooms, and that's permissible in the hotel or boutique hotel. So the maximum number of guest rooms you would have in a boutique hotel would be 100, right? It could be no more than 2?
This says 25.
For a boutique hotel, reduces it to 25. Gotcha.
Hotel, yeah.
So it could be a maximum of 50. Oh, no, it couldn't be. It'd be guest rooms.
Sleeping
rooms. It's defining guest rooms as sleeping rooms. Okay. Well, that's even smaller than what is there. Would that create non-conforming hotels within our district by narrowing the definition of boutique hotel down from 50 to 25?
I don't think anything we have existing.
Okay.
See, the post house is like 7 or 8. Shem Creek Inn. I don't think it has more than that.
Okay.
I think those are only 2 boutique hotels.
And boutique hotels would then be allowed in everything except neighborhood commercial, right? And neighborhood commercial would no longer allow hotels in entirely, right? According to what Mr. Chapman would like.
Right.
We just strike inns.
We just strike inns for clarity. I feel like for clarity, creating 3 whole categories is a little bit confusing.
Okay, so
I can. You want me to
amend the motion?
Amend the motion to forward these definitions, excluding inns from neighborhood commercial, to full council,
and excluding hotels from neighborhood commercial in its entirety.
And what about Ms. Whitley's concern with the language? With
I think this fixes it.
Does it? Okay.
Sleeping room
amendment.
I'm sorry. Who seconded the amendment?
I did.
Thank you.
All right. So as is, it would be this update of changes, but striking inns and removing hotels from neighborhood commercial, period. So that on an ongoing basis, neighborhood commercial would no longer permit hotels. So that would create a non-conforming hotel in the post house inn. Right, because they're neighborhood commercial. So that would create not. But under our non-conforming ordinance, if anything were to happen to that inn, they would be permitted to rebuild.
Yes.
Okay. Ms. Hyatt?
Could we request that an ordinance be prepared for council containing these definitions for review?
For Tuesday?
For Tuesday.
Do we feel there's enough time? Maybe you have draft language.
Well, if it's, using yeah, and just to terms. Make sure I understand. So the recommendations from Planning Commission, you want that set aside, and this is the text amendment right here?
Right.
Okay.
But I think it sort of encompasses what planning said, with the exception of the creation of this new inn category.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Do we have anything further on this issue? We have a motion and we have a second. All right. Any further discussion?
My only discussion is we've sent this to the Planning Commission. They gave us their thoughts. I'd like to get their, acquiescence, if you will, for excluding their suggestions, if you will, in lieu of what we thought. I'm concerned that, you know, we sent it to them. They gave us their thoughts, and now we're kind of ignoring them.
But isn't that within the purview of council to do? Like, Planning Commission makes recommendations to committee.
I agree with that. My only thought is, if we do first reading for something Tuesday, does that preclude us from allowing the Planning Commission to have a public hearing on it?
Mr. Chapman, I can answer that. It would require a public hearing by a Planning Commission. It just depends on the order you wish for that to happen.
So for us to do something Tuesday night, it still goes back to Planning Commission?
Yes, sir.
For holding a public hearing?
That's correct.
Okay, thank you. That's all I was worried about.
All right.
I wanted to make sure that they still had the opportunity to do something.
Okay, great. All right, so we have a motion, we have a second. Any further discussion, Ms. Hyatt?
And the motion is to prepare an ordinance.
Yes, for reading on Tuesday.
For reading on Tuesday.
And we? For first reading on Tuesday. And the plan will be first reading on Tuesday, it will go back to commission, we'll have public hearing, and then we'll come back to council for final reading with potential amendments. All right.
With the amendment excluding the ends.
From neighborhood commercial and hotel.
All right, if there's no further discussion, all those in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries. All right, item 8 on the agenda. If there's nothing more to come before us, we are adjourned.
I know. We're really moved quickly.